One to talking about the soul of money, a really great topic. I'm Brian Saber, president of Asking Matters. I'm delighted to have this massive audience here today, which is obviously a testament to the topic and our speaker, who I'll mention in a minute. I have to say I'm really intrigued by this topic. It's not one I cover myself, and yet I know that that money is a very complicated, I would say, issue for me, and it has to affect how I fundraise in addition to how I see the world. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from Lori. First, just a bit of housekeeping before I introduce Lori and pass this off to her. Hopefully you are seeing a control panel right now on your screen along with a set of slides. Two things to watch out for here. One, audio. Most of us listen over our... by the way, I'm hearing some noise in the background, someone who might still be unmuted from our team. If you are having any issues with your phone, with your computer audio, toggle to telephone and you can call in. Second is the questions box. There are hundreds of you on today, so we will not necessarily get to all questions, but Lori loves to take them as she goes along. Please type them in the questions box. If Lori doesn't get to them, she's happy to answer them offline, and she'll explain further, but she'll ask you probably to go either to her blog or her Facebook page, and she'll answer them that way. You will be getting a PDF of the slides and a link to the recording by tomorrow, maybe late today, so you don't have to write down everything you see on the screen. So now, without further ado, though I'm going to let Lori introduce herself mostly, I just want to say that I've known Lori, we were trying to figure it out, at least probably 6 or 7 years. I think she's one of the first people I met in this field as I branched out to have a web presence and a training presence. And all of our interactions have been delightful and enlightening, and so I am always thrilled when Lori can come back and present, because she has a crystal clear way of teaching, a passion for our field, and I have to say Lori's from Minnesota. And I spent 15 years in Chicago and have a real affinity for Midwesterners, and I think that's part of the reason that Lori and I get along so well, I like to think. So without further ado, because Lori will talk more about her experience, I am going to change presenters, turn over the our presentation today to Lori, and let her take it away. Lori.
I'm showing my screen as we speak. Thank you, Brian. It's so good to be here, and thank you all of you who are on with us. We're going to jump in. I know that your time is valuable, and I want to honor that and just thank you. Thank you for whatever you did to clear some of your calendar today to be with us for this hour. I am someone who loves to deliver webinars, actually, though being live and in person, face-to-face, is fun as well. This is a format that allows me to get a chance to sit here in my office in Minneapolis and not have to go outside in the steamy weather and be in your offices all over the country. So first thing that I would like to ask is that you let me know, and Mark, that's a great question. I'm going to ask someone on the team to flag that, since it'll be way at the beginning of the list of questions. Let's make sure you all know how to use the question box, and if you would, just tell me your title and what city you're in. What is your title and what city? Go ahead and type that into the question box, and we will dive in. Awesome. We are literally around the country. We've got folks in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, Boston, Cape Cod, Vermont, North Dakota, Minnesota, hello, Wisconsin, D.C., Utah. Fabulous. I've been in all those states, not recently, most recently in Utah, and heading out east shortly. Lots of development directors, executive directors, welcome to the board members. I am someone who's been in our sector for a long time. Brian and I laughingly said I knew him, I met him when I had dark hair, and now it's pretty gray, but that's okay. I come by it naturally, and I love that part about what we get to do is be authentic. I've helped organizations raise about $300 million from individuals, and I get to do that through being a master storyteller and fundraising culture change expert. I love to train and work with both boards and staffs, and then also I do some writing. I've got a weekly blog. I help organizations with their writing, and I've put a lot of what I know into the system that I have about stories. What I believe that I do is to help you build a foundation of communication that supports your work, whether it be fundraising, donor engagement, board engagement, raising awareness about needing more clients, whatever it is. I believe the work we do in communication does that. I have been executive director and development director of organizations both here in Minnesota and in Phoenix, Arizona. And I come to this work, I tell folks, as a little girl, I wanted to help others. I was the babysitter in our neighborhood, and over the years of babysitting, had 50 families that I babysat for, and I always just wanted to help. So I told my parents I wanted to be either the governor of Minnesota to make the state better, or to be a flight attendant. Yes, they're very different jobs, but what I realized is I have the jobs titles wrong, but I actually have exactly what I wanted when I was a little girl. I get to help hundreds and thousands of organizations around the world, and I get to do that by traveling. Two of my teachers you'll see here on the screen, I'm an avid fan of reading Seth Godin's books and blog. In fact, he had a post today about we need less hustle and more building of relationships. I think it's a perfect message for fundraisers. But today we'll focus a bit more. I've got some of Seth's work in the slides, but we'll focus a bit more on Lynn Twist's book, The Soul of Money. This is a book that was written a number of years ago and just re-released in March of this year. I believe the first edition came out, oh gosh, maybe back in 2003 or 4. So it's been around for quite a while. It's a book I've given as a gift to major donors with organizations I've worked with. It's a book I've read many times, and literally I can say it's changed my life. What I have for you today is just to briefly touch on what it is that causes success, talk about why do we have money, can we have enough money, how could we talk about money a little more easily, and then touch on some ways and get your input on some ways to have mission-focused fundraising. So the main thing, the main way I believe that we can have success, and though it may seem like a big secret, as soon as I say it, you'll know, it really is about our communication. What do we say? How do we say it? In fact, what do we think? How do we make sure that we're being clear, we're being bold, we're being inviting, we're causing a sense of urgency, because every single one of you, there are literally hundreds of you on this call, your work is important. Whether it be making sure that you're making sure someone has a roof over their head, or they're fed, or someone has a scholarship to go to school, or they have a exact size grant that can make a difference for them. How we say, what we say, and who we say it to is really what the key is to our work. And you know this already, our reality is that lots of our donors are leaving. They're leaving because they say it's something about how we're communicating to them. And the good news that I believe about that is we can do something about that. And part of what I loved about all the titles that you have on here, we've got directors of philanthropy, we've got consultants, we've got board members, staff, you name it, different titles on staff, is all of us have to talk about money at some point. And when I talk about The Soul of Money and the books that I've read about it, the time I've spent with Lynn Twist, what she believes and I believe is that for many of us, our relationship with money is a conflicted one. We have behavior around money that comes from maybe not having enough, wishing we had more. It doesn't always gel with our really deeply held values and commitments. And that's where the soul part comes in. know, do you believe the world can be a better place? Do you believe the work you're doing is life-changing? That's the soulful part. So what I like to make sure happen is, as we go through this session, we're really focusing on some simple tactics, simple strategies. I want to make sure that anything you take away, you can implement, you can take action on as soon as possible. So before we go any further, I'd like to have you all take an action very quickly. We're going to flood the screen for me here. Type into the question box just one word to describe the work of your organization. Just one word, nothing else. Go ahead and begin. I'm going to read a few. Unforgettable, love, music, inspiration, transformative, feed, vital, resilience, culture changing, innovative, music, again, important, essential, compassion, inspired, seniors, women. I love this. I will stop there. Catalyzing is the last one. I could go on and on. Keep track of what those words are. Those words come from what I believe are those deeply held values and commitments, or your soul. It isn't about a religious experience. It's about what you hold most important. And our fundraising work is about fulfilling the aspirations of our supporters. I like to ask them and your other donors, your board members, your staff, what is one word that would describe our work to the rest of the community? And when you start to hear those words, you can use those words to speak into their listening. So you'll know that they're actually paying attention. What Lynn believes and I believe is that when we're consistent with our mission, our fundraising does produce enough money, but we have to infuse our events, our language, our website, our thoughts with conversations that come from that mission-focused word that you just typed in, life-changing, surprising, curiosity. So why do we need money in the first place? Well, of course, we dream about it. We argue about it sometimes, worry about it. We spend it. I hope some of us are saving it, actually. The reason, of course, that we have money is we don't always have the right tools to barter. We can't take 10 chickens home with us, so we have to have some form of communication or some form of transaction that allows us to be able to share goods and services. So the most important, let me go back for a second before I show you that slide, the most important thing to know is we created money. It's a creation of our own culture. Most cultures have some form of creativity around money. For some, it's shells. For others, it's a coin. For us, it's dollar bills and coins. Any part of the world, there are different ways that we can share our goods and services, but there's almost always some sort of currency that's used. So if we know that we've given some power to this currency, what I ask is that we really examine how we think about and talk about that currency, that transaction that we have with someone. And before we dive deeper into Lynn's thoughts on the soul of money and how I incorporate it into my work, I wanted to make sure you have a link here to read at a later time. The Nonprofit Manifesto, written a number of years ago by Seth Godin. This link on the screen, just so you know, is a bit.ly link, which means it is case sensitive, and the folks from Asking Matters will likely share with you the slides afterwards. You'll have access to all of these links, but case sensitive means there's a uppercase Z, O, V, and a lowercase K, and so on. But the two concepts in this quick manifesto that Seth Godin wrote a few years ago, one is that asking for money is really all about getting money from people, digging into people's checkbook and getting their money. Well, the truth is, that's not necessarily what it is. I would like you to think about how important is the problem that you're working to solve? How is it that money makes a difference? Because it's actually a tool to cause you to do your work. It isn't the be-all and end-all of your existence. And if we think about inspiring others to see the world the way that we do, with the same understanding of why your work is important, and the same vision of how we can overcome whatever is missing in our community by providing our services or our grants or our scholarships or whatever it is, the resources, the money comes second, and the communication about the why actually comes first. And then another thought that Seth has, and I really love this thought, is that our society has done a really spectacular job of creating wealth for many people, and others don't have any wealth. Lynn Twist talks about those folks that we would describe as poor, but for her, and for sure for me, I get to meet many of those folks, and that is the last word I'd use to call them. They are sometimes the most courageous, strong, powerful people that I've ever met. And when we think about someone who has money as having more resources, we're giving some of that power to them. So what if we, rather than saying, give me some of your money, we say something like this to those that have some of that money. You're incredibly good at making money. We at our organization are incredibly good about making change. The change that we want to make in the world, unfortunately, doesn't generate a lot of financial resources, but boy, does it cause change. It's hugely important. And so, because I know that this change is good and important, and I know that we're good at that, and you're good at making money, how about if we come together with our resources, and you bring some of yours, and I bring some of our organizations, and together we partner to make the world a better place? Now you're taking the power away from the dollars and the donor and saying, we're really of equal value. We have knowledge that is better or best about some of the things that need to happen in our community to make this world a better place. Will you partner with us to do that? Often the words we use, I hate to say, are very utilitarian, a little dry. They can sound like the blah, 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 blah when you drive through the drive-through at the, whatever fast food restaurant. I call it utilitarian language. And that utilitarian language is something like this. Hey, make a donation to us. Hey, attend our event. Help us. Please help us. Give us more. Give again. Give again. That, to me, isn't communication that's inspiring or fulfilling the aspirations of our supporters. When we invite investments or show someone their impact or ask them, would you like to know where your gift will matter, who it will actually help? Because if you would like to, we're looking for long-term partnerships. The communication can change to something that causes people to take a look at what is in their soul. What is it that they want to be doing to make the planet a better place? And then there's the other scarcity type communication where we're talking about how hard it is to make change. There's donor fatigue out in the world. We can't do something different. We don't have enough time, donors, money. And for sure, no one on our team will do whatever it is we're learning here today. So I say, change the focus. I like to ask people to reframe. And I've asked my mom, in fact, she's 80 years old, and she just moved back here from a small retirement community, her and my dad, back to Minneapolis from Arizona. And my mom has got some scarcity language, so she is now changing those words to, I'm learning to drive on the freeways in a way I never did before. If we're looking for language that is inspiring, we can say, we'd like to inspire you to give long-term. What if we could change, what if we could put a closed sign on our door because we'd raised all that we required or all that our community required? We're looking for the very right people who want to be our long-term partners. Just shifting the language basis of possibility, and maybe we aren't sure how to do it yet, but we know that we could do it. It's possible. Can change how people respond. What I will ask you is this question in a moment will touch on your own beliefs and your own thoughts. But before I do that, you might have heard the famous Gandhi quote, your beliefs become your thoughts become your words become your actions become your habits become your values, and your values become your destiny. I believe that it starts all the way back with our beliefs. It's hard to do my work. That flows all the way into that grant proposal you write, the language for that you put on the invitation, not reminding us to know that when we attend the event, we're changing the life of one child or one veteran at a time. So paying attention to those word choices and paying attention to the dollars that it takes to do your work, just type into the question box, let's find out what is enough money at your organization. What is the amount? Simone says 200,000. What for each of you? Never enough, says Deborah, but I need specifics so that I would know how much to give you. Depends, love that. 20 million, 10 million, an endowment that generates 3 million a year, whatever we get from donors. Wrong answer. To run a successful enterprise, let's see, 10 million, 160,000 annually. So here's what I can see. We've got all over the board. Depends on the impact that we want to make. I would ask you this. What does it take to serve one person at your organization? At the university, at the Nature Conservancy, at Rainbow Village, at any of your organizations, what does it take to serve one person? 1,500, 10,000, 1,200, 4,000, 50,000 a year for 4 years, okay, 600 per patient. As you understand what it takes, notice I didn't say what it costs, what it takes. Does it take 600,000, Cassandra, to help one person? Or is that 600,000 for the whole, what you would like to have, what would be enough money? The answer that I like to give when I ask this question, what would be enough money, is enough to answer the needs of the people that we serve annually. And right now that is blank. And the people who are on our waiting list or who don't know about us. And so we imagine or we envision that to be around, I love the example someone said of having an endowment large enough to throw off $3 million a year. So the money conversation has to be a conversation that comes from some basis and some knowledge, and it also releases us from some of the scarcity thinking that we have around it. So let me take you through a couple of thoughts and then we'll come back and visit this money conversation. In The Soul of Money, Lynn talks about the three toxic myths of scarcity. And these three toxic myths could be about, you know, just about anything. What I will start with is the first myth is that there's never enough. There's not enough to go around. Somebody will be left out. There's not enough food, water. Some of you woke up this morning. Your first thought was, I didn't get enough sleep last night, no matter what time you went to bed last night. Once we define our world as deficient, the total of our life, everything that we think about, especially around money and especially in our work, becomes an expression of an effort to overcome the lack that we perceive. So then that takes us to myth number two, more is better. This happens to be the logical response if you fear there isn't enough. But more is better drives us in this culture of accumulation, This is not my garage, just so you know, but it quickens our pace every day to have more. There's a race now. When I was a little girl, we played musical chairs, and I was taught there isn't enough by running around those chairs, and the chair got pulled out. As I got older, I was taught that more would be better, especially in our house. We wanted to have more. We were probably a middle to low income family when I was growing up. My mom was always talking about what we would do when we got the washing machine or the new this or the new that. How I know more is better is a rampant myth in our culture, and a toxic myth is one of the fastest growing industries in our country is storage. We build buildings to put things in that we don't have enough space for in our homes. Then we get to that final toxic myth, and that is that's just the way it is. Other organizations will have more visibility, more dollars. There's no way out. We're on this vicious cycle now. And this myth is a part of the whole way we view our day and our work. It's sort of the source of our justification of not taking deeper focus or action on what is our money conversation. This is the myth that holds us in place, because here's what I know for sure. You can find evidence for anything you look for. And if you look for, we don't have enough, we just won't ever have enough, it's just the way it is, you will find evidence for that. I have been the only development director or executive director, the only staff person in three different organizations. And we grew those organizations from teeny tiny donated space to 5 and 10 employees, from 12 or 20 volunteers to thousands of volunteers. And we grew our fundraising from $100,000 to millions of dollars, because we decided that we were going to stop looking through the lens of scarcity. And we would look at, and this is a question I ask every organization I work with, what is working? What is working today? What is one thing that's working at your organization? Would you type in to the question box one quick phrase, one quick, what is the answer, what is your answer to here's what's working or what's working? We have a great theater. We have passion. Our kids are learning. We have excellent messaging. We have good people. We have teamwork. We have great concerts. We have a proven track record. We have, seniors are getting delicious meals. We're making a difference. We're a strong community. We're reaching more students every year. We have a consistent effort. We have a strong relationship with fill in the blank. We meet a clear and demonstrated need in the community. We have a talented team. Animals aren't suffering in the ways that they used to. We make contributions to a civil society. Coming from what's working will actually have you start to focus on, so what does it take? Not what do we need, not what does it cost, what does it take to continue to have what's working work? One of the things that Lynn says in The Soul of Money is what you appreciate appreciates. So if you've got 50 donors and you appreciate them really well, let's make sure then that we're letting them know the impact that they're making, so more of them show up. The question isn't how do we get the money. You've got donors in your database who are giving you $25 gifts, $50 gifts, $1,000 gifts for some of you. You're making sure that you're generating some quote-unquote money. My request is that rather than asking how do we get into people's pocketbooks, that we examine the question, what is our relationship here at our organization around money? When we are looking at money as a carrier of commitment to our organization, as fulfilling the aspirations of our supporters, then that invitation to invest in our work can do more good. When we're looking for people to give us money, that's actually a transaction. It's actually a one-time transaction. It feels like going to the ATM. What we're looking for is, what is our relationship with changing the world? What is our relationship with how we talk about the tools that are needed to change the world? It is counselors or people soliciting for gifts so we have more money to give for scholarships. It's better classrooms. It's better equipment. It's better visibility. Whatever it is, we want to make sure that we're equating that with what it takes to do our work and making sure then that people understand that they can be a part of our corner of changing the world. So when I invite you to talk about money with ease and joy, what I'll tell you is my work is about one thing, and that is to help you raise the dollars that you require to do what you require because the community needs you to do something. My vision is that you get to do your work with some ease and joy. And what I request is that if people are listening to my sessions or doing some work with me through coaching or whatever it is, that you're committed to change, that you're committed to stepping outside your comfort zone, and that you're committed to making some massive changes or massive results occur by reframing the lens that you look through. The secret sauce that I bring to the table is I give you permission to talk about money. You get to talk about money in a way that causes people to get lit up, inspired, and taking action and doing exactly whatever it is you'd like them to do. So what is it that you raise money for? And I'm going to have you think about this a bit before you answer. Some of you are going to say, we raise money for X program. Now that you've listened to me for a couple of minutes, what do you raise money for? Are you raising money for a specific person? Are you raising money for a specific transformational outcome? Shift how you answer this question based on what I'm talking about of giving some language to when money is a carrier of commitment and courage and transformation. And now type in, what are you raising money for? Oh my gosh, I love what you're talking about here. Inclusion, to give people the opportunity, I missed that when it went by so fast, to create humanizing experience for inmates in U.S. prisons. Wow, to change the lives of children, to ensure public, let's see, you're going fast, you guys. That's what happens when there's thousands of you on. I gotta pause my little list here for a second, go back. To inspire women and girls to live to their fullest potential, to ensure public school students can succeed tomorrow and today. We're raising money for the safety of people with disabilities. We're raising money to make sure everyone gets high quality health care, whether or not they have insurance or financial means. Folks, I am with you. When you talk about what you're raising money for in this way, heck, I wish I were a billionaire because I'd like to give to each one of you. You're talking about what you do from possibility and from transformation versus transaction. And I hope that you're feeling the difference. You're allowing the soul of your work, really, to come through in the language choices that you're making here. All right, so thank you for doing that and being so specific. I wrote a blog post, maybe some of you saw it in preparation for this session, about Lynn's story. This is my blog page, my Firestarters blog page, and the post was written on May 17th. Talked about how money is like water. Lynn tells a story in her work. She was recently on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday, but the story I like to tell, and I'll have you read the post. I won't tell you the whole story, but she tells a story about going to pick up a check from a gentleman who his food company here in the Midwest had done something wrong, and they were giving some sort of feel-good money, mainly to have themselves feel good. And then she went to pick up, actually to visit with some folks in Chicago, actually in Harlem. And it was raining, she was late. This was a room of the working poor. And she invited them to support the Hunger Project. And the woman that made the difference to her said, "Girl, my name is Gertrude, and I like what you've said, and I like you. Now, I don't have a checkbook or credit cards. To me, money is a lot like water. For some folks, it rushes through their lives like a raging river. Money comes through my life like a trickle, but I want to pass it on in a way that does the most good for the most folks. And as I see it, my responsibility and my right and also my joy is to give money." She had $50 that she gave that day, and every single person in the room gave whatever they had in their pockets. The end of that story is that, close out of that and get back to my slides. The end of that story is that Lynn returned the $50,000 check to the gentleman who gave it, because it wasn't given with a sense of commitment. It wasn't given with a sense of giving from ending world hunger. And years later, the gentleman she returned that $50,000 to said, "That return of that check changed my life. Would you please accept my personal check that does come with my own commitment, my engagement, and my intentionality, and my participation in ending world hunger? I have enclosed a check for $250,000. Here's what I know. Money flows into your organizations, into your bank account, but it also flows out. It's supposed to. It's supposed to go somewhere next and do some more good. So our job is to invite it to stop by for a little bit. So our message then must be, how is money making a difference here in our organization? How can you, Ursula, or Abigail, or Paul, how can you make a gift, an investment, if you will, that will do more good together with other investments than if you did something alone? So changing the language of that invitation can cause people to want to give more, but you have to be specific about what it is that we're looking for. What does it take to do our work? So we sometimes forget to tell people what it costs per person, what it takes per day or per week, that we have a waiting list, that we have folks we say no to, and when we have the resources, we could be doing more. Sometimes we forget to let folks know that simply having more unrestricted operating dollars would allow us to message more regularly to you, to have you feel great about the investment that you've already made. So your money story is part of the soulness, that soul of money conversation. It's, what does it take to do your work today, and where do we want to be by the end of the year, the end of the month, the end of the quarter? It's subtracting what we've received from tuition or contributions or United Way or fees for service or ticket sales or whatever that is, and giving an update. But this isn't a budget number. This is actually a number that talks about what does it truly take this year to add in some things. Your budget doesn't have growth built in usually. Your budget is written to make sure we can balance it at the end of the year. So I want you to talk about your money story as a visionary number. And how you do that is remind people what's missing. What is the reason we exist in the community? There aren't enough homes for our veterans in our community. What it takes to support one veteran is $1,500 to put them through some of our education programs to help them find a job. And the truth is, we've got 75 men, women, families waiting. So let me tell you about one of them. Let me have you understand the difference that life can be for just one person. The understanding of how to communicate like this comes from the top down, but the conversations that we have to get people inspired to take action, they come from that one person example. They come from the bottom up. So let me give you a quick example of a money story combined with a people story. Just recently, I spoke to 25 of our college presidents and their board chairs here in Minnesota. And I found this on one of the donate pages. It was how to make a difference. 300 students received scholarships totaling almost $300,000. And the number of scholarship applications submitted over the past 5 years had doubled, and more than 1,000 students submitted scholarship applications. What they didn't tell me is about one person whose life was different because of that scholarship that they had received. So I had to find on a different website the story of a recent grad who got a scholarship, who got to complete her two majors. Now, I would have loved the information from the Making a Difference website page and the Success Story page to be in the same place, to have me get excited about what I could do, what's the average scholarship that a student receives. So that's how we blend our people and money story together. It's about calling people to have a conversation with us and a relationship with the lives that we're changing, not having a transactional conversation with folks. That transaction is like asking them to give $100 and hopefully maybe we're keeping our fingers crossed that they'll come back and give $100 again next year. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking to focus on our mission and infuse that into our fundraising. So from Blue Frog, I've incorporated this graphic into my work. How we overlap with our supporters is that we're helping solve some community problem. But the things that we like to tell our supporters is why we need your money, what we believe, what our new approach is, how great we are, that we're on Facebook and Twitter, that we've been in the news, how you can support us, why we think you should support us. But the truth is, what that supporter wants to hear from you is, what did you achieve with my gift? And that I made the right decision to support you, that you value me, that you think I'm special, that you know how I want you to communicate with me, and that you've remembered what I've said so that we can solve a problem together. You want to go back to the pyramid slide? We can go back to it for a second. Let me just go back to it for 1 second. There you go. Take a screenshot, quick, Mark. And just know the slides will come out afterwards, and you'll be able to refer to them. All right, so in this example of communication, I noticed that we're often over here pushing out communication, and one of the very best ways you can have me feel great about my gift is by putting a face on the impact of my gift, having me understand one story of one person whose life is different because I have made my $1,000 gift, my $100 gift, I made a scholarship gift, whatever it is, somebody's life is different. In the crowded world of soliciting for gifts, you want to stand out. You want people to pay attention to you, and you want people to take action. So when you put that face on the impact that I have, and you remind me what it takes, not what it costs, not what you need, because you don't need anything. The people in your community need something. You are raising dollars, looking for investors, and identifying people who will give you exactly what it takes to support your community. Then you want to share that information all over the place. You want to have fun with it. You want to make graphics out of it. You want to make, GIFs out of it. You want to do whatever it is that it takes to have people pay attention. You know what dopamine is. If you have that chocolate bar or that donut, or you go for that run, or you read that book, or you watch that movie, there's some sort of pleasure that happens, a chemical reaction in our brains. Well, if pleasure is the central motivator in our lives, here's what research tells us. Our brain, that dopamine reaction happens when we give to charitable organizations and they communicate with us about how our gift makes a difference. They infuse the mission of what's happening because of my gift regularly. So I call that sharing a mission moment. It's a short, inspirational example of how your work is happening. But it's got to have a face and a name and an age. It could be anyone. It could be you. It could be a student. It could be a donor. It could be a volunteer. I don't care. But I want to know some details about what they felt before they came to you. How are they feeling now? And we could do a whole nother session someday, Brian, on how to put that story together effectively and have it be powerful. But the truth that you're looking for is you want people to have an unforgettable emotional connection and have some empathy. What I mean by empathy is really simple. It's the ability to understand and share the feelings of someone else. I might not have any children myself, which I don't, but an organization that supports children, I have a special feeling for them because I adore my nieces and nephews and I see them in your work. When you're sharing a mission moment, please don't cause me to feel sorry for someone. That's creating a distance because I feel sorry for you and now we're separate. What I'm looking for is that you create an empathetic connection about, gosh, somebody who got a scholarship because they really worked hard at something, or someone who they went through your program and they now feel different and they've got a job because of what you taught them. So you want to start with knowing who your supporters are, the longest supporting, the largest supporting. Have them feel connected to one mission moment. Have your board members and staff know the names of your top donors, your longest giving, and your biggest donors. Have them know who gave this week, how many people stopped giving. Make sure that we're thanking quickly, but we're knowing the faces and names. This organization took pictures of every person, and they had 500 people at their event. They had multiple picture sites up, and they posted those contact sheets on Facebook. But they also tagged us, and they've used this picture of me and my niece in communication with me multiple times. Now, donors are recognizable to staff and board, but we felt seen. We felt known. One of the ways to know people is to invite them in for what I call a sizzling, mission-focused agency visit. And if you're inviting people in right now for some sort of tour, what I can tell you is it probably doesn't sizzle and you talk at them. So I've got a checklist. It's a 2-page checklist you can download later. You want to listen at least 50% of the time, and you want to have people feel something within the first 4 minutes about how it might feel to be one of the folks that you serve. Whether receiving a grant, getting a scholarship, receiving a home, being taken out of a home and placed somewhere else. You want to share compelling communication that's mission-focused. This organization pays a lot of attention to their subject line, so I'm feeling something about their work before I even read the story, and the story then has me want to know more about how I can make a difference. Sharing your money story, what it takes to close your gap. This gentleman, Chuck, down in Volunteers of America in Shreveport, does it the best. I will answer that question about hospital tours in just a moment, Patrice, because I've done a number of hospital visits that have been engaging. This gentleman, Chuck, if you called him today and said, how are you and what does Volunteers of America do, he would say, well, I can't tell you that until I let you know that we are on a mission to close our $1.9 million funding gap. That's what it'll take to do our work this year. And as of today, we're at the end of our fiscal year. We're already working to close our next year's funding gap. So we've raised maybe $100,000 towards that $1.9 million. But let me tell you about Tony in our after-school program. So sharing a bit of money story and people story is critical. Let me absolutely say to Marley, yes, you want to change the names to protect privacy. And in a hospital situation, Patrice, one of the things that I did, I worked with the Covenant Hospital group in the Milwaukee area, 7 different locations. We did have tours. We did not meet patients, but we would go into a couple of areas that were pretty amazing. We would go into the radiation room and hear a story with the first name changed about how receiving some support to get the radiation treatment she needed was really helpful, and how supporting their endowment to purchase equipment like the gun that was in that radiation room was really key. But we also started and ended in a library where we had cards, you know, the name cards like you might have at a board meeting, and they were faced out in a circle. And we told a little bit of a story about each of the people that we would you would never meet who would support you if you came through and needed service or care at our hospital, from the intake person story to a donor who had funded a specific program to the lab tech story. There were anywhere from 12 to 17 people who were supporting me if I would come into their hospital. And I had never met any of them, or maybe I met one or two of them. But we then talked a bit about what it takes to do that, to provide that quality of care. Hopefully that helps, Patrice. Sharing clear messages, what Chuck does, the gentleman on the previous screen, is when the organization receives a gift of $250 or more, he sends them a handwritten note, and he sends them a folded up piece of paper like these on the screen that gives some reason why the program is needed that he's highlighting today, but it tells a story, so I have a face. And he likes to tell in the thank you note that I wanted to include a bit of information so you could look into the eyes of someone whose life is different because of your gift. This organization infuses their mission. They build affordable housing. And when they do that, they invite the community to tell the well wishes to the residents of this building now and in the future, and they put that into a time capsule in the wall of the building. So the event happens before the walls are closed up, but we keep, we take a picture of the different messages so we can share those through our social media and other ways throughout the year. I believe that we have this opportunity to cause our supporters to feel like superheroes by how we communicate with them, the messages we share, the invitations that we make to them about how to invest, how to communicate back with us. So knowing that, in a moment I'm going to ask you a question about how you'll talk about money differently, but I wanted to make sure that you know how to stay in touch with me if you'd like. I do have some places, social media, Facebook and blog, free resources on my website, but I also offer you the opportunity to talk with me. There's a link that is a bit.ly link. Again, it's case sensitive, and you can sign up for 30 minutes just to talk with me about any follow-up questions or barriers that you might see to immersing your mission into your fundraising at a deeper level. So here's my question. Please type in your answer. How will we talk about money differently at our organization? What do you see now? Just briefly, what might you incorporate? And now is the time to ask any questions that you've got as well. I want to make sure that we get as many questions as possible answered. We're going to reframe things in the positive. It's not about us. It's about the people we serve, absolutely. We're going to change our language just a bit to talk less about need and more about impact. Love this. Cultivate relationships. Natasha likes the pyramid. We're going to tie our asks to an individual. Love that. I love talking about possibility, and so that resonated with you. Feature stories about our staff, sure, and focus on our impact. And remember, it's the donor's impact that you want to focus on. It's going to take rather than what we need. We're going to talk about that. Love, love, love this interaction, you guys. You're awesome. Remember that what we're doing is we're building a relationship. Less hustle for more donors, more knowing the ones you have a little bit better. Karen's going to redo our tours and move away from talking about us and talk about how the donors have an impact. Ooh, I love that. Brian, I hear you coming on. Did you have any questions you have for me?
Yeah. Well, actually, Mark at the beginning had a very interesting question that we didn't get to.
Yes, thank you.
About asking friends and family and what happens when it's personal. And as I think about that, and you know, at Asking Matters, and many people on today are followers of ours, we talk about the asking styles, and the various styles have different relationships to people they know in terms of asking them for money. How does all of that come together in terms of what you're teaching here?
Well, and so asking, as you and I know, is a very personal, a very powerful conversation. I believe that we are inspiring folks to invest, and so if that is that my family wants to invest in some way, great. What I would ask, Mark, is what kind of organization? I work right now. My parents are in a care center. I just my family, you know, visited a number of places, and they're in a care center. And I fully expect to be invited to make a contribution to this nonprofit where my parents now live. Now, of course, they pay rent, but there are costs that aren't covered by Medicare insurance and the rent that they pay. And so I expect to be invited to help close that gap because I want my parents to have a quality of care that they can't have anywhere else.
Yes. But so let's take that a step further.
Yeah.
Often, and this, of course, is a challenge in involving all of our board members to ask in particular, right? There's this, who do you know? And board members are often asked to identify people who have capacity, who have their own causes, and that's where it can get very personal, where, I mean, we can all probably agree many, many causes are worthwhile, right? So you go to your friend, and the friend's not going to say, I don't think we should cure heart disease, I don't think we should, you know, keep children safe, whatever it is. But then it's making that leap in that personal space, right, to talk about money, which can be awkward, talking to people you know.
And so it's one of the reasons I like to talk about, here's what it takes to do our work that I know you believe is important. Now, whether or not you and your family members would like to invest, I want you to know the true cost. We want to be transparent about that. And as you know, Brian, and all the folks on the call know, unrestricted operating dollars is the golden money. And we want to invite unrestricted operating dollars for folks to allow us to make the decision to put those dollars to the very best use that we can, because you know that we've got a proven track record, and we will. So it truly does take $1.9 million to do our work. And we break that apart by, you know, weekly or monthly gifts, whatever it is you'd like to do to invest. I would say for Mark on the call here, bringing the work that you do in is with those partner organizations to make sure seniors have a quality of life that we want them to have. You want to talk about quality of life and quality of care, and that there is a gap between what it takes to process all of those rent checks or Medicare support to what is really what you want us to be able to be doing for our folks here in our residence. So get me to be excited about what that additional investment is. And this conversation for Mark and all the rest of you who serve an aging population isn't going away. You want to crack the code on how to talk about your work in a way that you're proud of and engages folks and causes them to want to take action no matter what it costs. Some folks have less money than others. Some folks will make a larger gift even when they have less money because they were inspired. Well, you know, we could talk forever, you and I, Brian, about the different ways, you know, folks can ask and make a difference. I just invite folks to stay connected to you, to me, to whomever in their life gives them some inspiration to do their work even better, which is what the asking styles really do. It has you know you are perfect just how you are, no matter if you are a kindred spirit like me or some other style. But stay connected, ask questions, visit different posts that we've got. I just honor each of you for the work that you do, and I love that you showed up ready to learn and listen today.
Well, and Lori, we thank you. As always, I learned so much. I've got two pages of notes here. One thing in particular, sympathy creates distance, empathy creates connection. I always talk about empathy, but not in relation to sympathy. Fascinating, important point among many that you shared with us today. And people I see are typing in how grateful they are for all of your wonderful content. Thank you for being with us again at Asking Matters. We will definitely have you back. Again and again, and thank you everyone for joining us today. Have a great afternoon.
Yes, goodbye. Thank you.
Take care.